And we are live on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. This is Street Knowledge. I'm Chris Graham, joined by Scott German. And we're going to talk some UVA sports, ACC sports, I presume, as well. I guess we'll start, Scott, talking scheduling. Here we are, less than 24 hours from the opening tip of the 2020-2021 season. And we're playing a different team tomorrow, UVA is, and in a slightly different time. 1:30 tip, UVA playing Towson. From the CAA instead of playing Maine. I think Maine's also a CAA team. So Maine out, no reason given. We don't know. Like, I haven't seen anything. I follow several college basketball writers on Twitter. I've not seen that Maine is any COVID protocols, just that we're playing Towson now. And so that's on Wednesday at 1:30. Don't know about the TV situation, if it's still that Flow Hoop streaming service. Or if it's moved to some other far-flung place or on TV. I think I've seen, Scott, that the San Francisco game now, which replaces Florida, that's Friday at 11 o'clock, and that will be on ESPN, 11 a.m. on ESPN. So, wow, yeah, that's the latest, and who knows? We're talking now at 3:30 on Tuesday, Scott. Things may change here in a couple minutes. Who knows?
Let's not forget that both of those first two games, I'm correct. Maybe I know the first game, but both of those games are on the Flow.
I think as I mentioned, the first game, well, we don't know. I've not seen about the Flow Hoops. The second game is on ESPN. The Friday game I've read from San Francisco's Twitter is 11 o'clock on 11 a.m. on ESPN. I thought I'd better say 11 a.m. because you could presume 11 p.m. No, 11 a.m. on Friday. On ESPN. So who knows tomorrow? Flow Hoops, you might have to stick your head out the window and see if you can pick up something on your antenna. Who knows? Flow Hoops probably, but we just don't know that for sure.
So you're going to be you're probably too young to pick this up. But when I learned about the game being on Flow Hoops, the only thing that I could think of saying was kiss my grits.
You know, I actually remember that show, Alice. No, And actually, kiss my grits, as far as Flow Hoops is concerned, if we have to go that route, that's $30 to watch a game. And, you know, Scott, I wrote about this. It's fine for me. It's probably fine for you. You know, I can write
a lot of people it's not fine for.
That's what I was going to say. For a lot of folks, it's not fine. You know, we have millions of people out of work. I mean, a lot of people are back to work. They got their jobs back since the mid-March stay-at-home orders were instituted. But a lot of people are still out of work. And maybe, you know, kind of catching up from where they lost their jobs. And a lot of UVA basketball fans have been looking forward to this, you know, this team's tip-off for a long time. And now you're being asked to pay $30 to watch it on some streaming service you'll use once. That's not cool.
No. And it's against Maine, Towson. Who knows what it's going to ultimately get. It may be that game may end up being shirts versus skins. You know, I mean, it's hard to tell. I'm serious. It's a last second. It could be that they just televise a UVA intra-squad game.
Well, I've broadcast several VMI intra-squad games this fall. So, you know, but no, we're going to play somebody tomorrow. Towson is there for three games. They're playing Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We're playing Wednesday, Friday. San Francisco is on their way there. Not Bill Russell, San Francisco, by the way. Just San Francisco, the Dons. I think they're still the Dons.
Yeah, they're the Dons.
They'll be there. I guess, you know, we can say, you know, we can have fun with that, or we can say kudos to all the folks who are working hard to get games scheduled and get games played. You know, the thing that I think is being lost here, Scott, the college basketball writer John Rothstein is someone I follow on Twitter, and he makes a daily update. Okay, here we are in a pandemic, the tail end of the pandemic, but still in the pandemic. And roughly 90% of college basketball teams, and there are 357 of them in Division I this year. So 90% of 357 is roughly 300 or so, probably a little bit more than 300. Are still active, still playing. Now, we're focusing, yes, because the schedules are shifting, et cetera, on the games that are being moved. But by and large, 90% of the teams are still playing and still practicing, still on schedule. And, hey, the teams that aren't, you know, have one guy out and then contact tracing, and they're sitting on the sidelines for a while. So, I mean, we could lament what isn't, or we could look at what is. And what is that in less than 24 hours, we're going to be watching UVA play basketball along, among many teams that will be tipping off tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, a week or so ago, I'm still not giving him any credit whatsoever because I just don't give credit to scumbags. But, you know, a week or so ago, Rick Pitino advocated not starting the college basketball season until January. And then going with just a conference schedule where if you wanted to do a bubbleville, you could certainly do it a little easier. But I'm wondering, is that now such a far-fetched idea?
Oh, it's terribly far-fetched. And here's why. Seth Greenberg addressed this on ESPN a lot yesterday. He kept getting asked about it, and he kept saying similar things. These kids have been on campus since July. You don't think about that. You think about the football team was there since July, but the basketball guys have been on campus since July too. What does it do to push it back a month, 2 months? What does that do for them? They've been practicing since, I mean, they don't practice like have 5-on-5 scrimmages, et cetera, in July, but in July they're doing teamwork. They're doing individual skill work, small group work, et cetera. And they did that for a couple of months. Then they started more scrimmage kind of things in October. So let's push it back 2 months. That's easy for us to say. But in 2 months, are we any further along? We're going to start, yes, the vaccines are likely to start going into healthcare workers' arms in a couple of weeks. We're told first week, maybe second week of December. Basketball players aren't a priority for this first phase of the vaccines. You know, there are a few layers, there are a few levels down. Wait till January. That's easy for us to say. That means the kids have to bubble up for two more months and then still play into May. They've already given up so much. If the worst is we have to inconvenience the schedules and you and I have to figure out when we're going to watch and where, that's the worst. But they're figuring it out. I'm giving them credit. They're figuring it out. They're flexible. Which you know, think, Scott, this is a weird thing. We schedule games 10, 15 years in advance. I mean, you always get these. We know who UVA football is playing in 2035. And then now they're having to schedule games like within 24 hours tomorrow. They're being flexible. And I think flexible, you know, in the end, Scott, I think this season more than any is going to emphasize the champion is going to be the best team in March and April. Let's just get to March and April. So, you know, I think Bill Self said this a lot yesterday. I saw the quote from him several times on SportsCenter. We can't get too high, can't get too low. Just play the games and let's get to March. That's going to be the focal point. And you know what? By March, I mean, a lot of folks a lot of the public health folks I'm following are suggesting that by March and April, things are going to be really in a decent place, good place, public health wise for the United States. That'd be great. Maybe we can actually have, I don't think we're going to have fans at the March Madness at the Final Four or anything else, but it'll be sort of a celebration of spring if we can just get through these couple months.
Yeah, and there's going to obviously be a lot of false starts and schedule changing, and which all, to me, will favor UVA because we know the preparation and how Tony, you know, just goes about his business. We're playing a team tomorrow, Towson, that we have less than 24 hours to prepare for, but I don't doubt that Tony and his coaching staff are already preparing for that. And, you know, our guys are ready. Our guys will be ready. So if anything, this even more so favors us in the long run. I think for a lot of teams, the scheduling changes, a lot of these games are going to look like pickup games.
Well, and you know, I'm not even going to worry about schedule changes so much. I think you make a good point, and then I'll jump off that point. I think it's going to favor the veteran teams this year, not schedule changes, but just the whole atmosphere that we're in right now. Because, you know, not only, I mean, the scheduling being what it is, honestly, we focus more on that. And I think, again, the us media folks and broadcasters focus more on the schedule changes than the players do. The players are guys, when they played AAU ball, which they did from the time they were 12, 13 years old, if not younger, they played several games in a day, and they didn't know who they were playing next, and they just played. You just go out there and play. And so these kids are ready to play ball. That's what they do. Basketball is what they do. But I think from the standpoint of, I mean, so the veteran teams like the, and UVA Villanova, I mean, that'll be a great game coming up in December, assuming we get to have that game in New York, like as scheduled. Those are veteran teams. The teams like the Dukes and Kentuckys will probably have a disadvantage because, you know, Duke, we know, I mean, they're ACC, so we follow them. You know, they don't really have a lot of guys back from last year. They certainly don't have their point guard back. Trey Jones is in the NBA now. You know, they those teams that have to reload every year. Carolina's a young team this year. Carolina has, you know, five-star players. They're talented, but they haven't played a lot. They haven't practiced a lot together. So I think those kind of situations will work out to their disadvantage for a while. And certainly the UVAs of the world, the UVAs and Villanovas, I'm blanking on who else I could think of, and maybe Florida State's, you know, the schools that have a lot of veteran guys back, it'll be to their advantage because those veteran guys don't need the practice time that those young teams need. And you know, so at least early in the season, I would think that the UVAs of the world will benefit, definitely.
So looking at the some other news that I just heard about, read about earlier, the ACC basketball tournament has been moved back to Greensboro.
And that makes sense. You know, it's if for nothing else, four of the schools are within short driving distance. Virginia Tech are 3 hours away. Clemson's probably 3 or 4 hours away. Atlanta, where Georgia Tech is maybe four and a half hours away. So it's the center of the conference. That makes sense. Nobody's close to, you know, D.C. I mean, I guess we're 3 hours away, but nobody's really close to D.C. And a more controlled environment. So it's a place that you know. It's Carolina. And so I think from that standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know that it matters from a fan standpoint. I'm not, you know, maybe by early March, you'll have scattered fans in the stands. Maybe, maybe you'll have more than scattered fans in the stands. But no, it's you know, when you're facing adversity, it's best to be home. And that's honestly, Scott, you and I have a long agreed on this. They should just put it there forever. Just kind of like the football game's always in Charlotte. The ACC basketball tournament should always be in Greensboro, but we're in the minority in that opinion.
Yeah, we definitely are. I agree. The ACC basketball tournament should be in Greensboro every year just for the historical, you know, reference to it all.
Well, it's also the biggest – I mean, in Greensboro, that's the biggest thing going on. You go to New York, which we're going to do apparently – I think it's next year we go back to Brooklyn. I mean, there's a million things going on in New York. There's a lot going on in D.C. There's, you know – in Greensboro, you are the event, and it's the place to be. Also, from a geographic standpoint, again, you know, I saw this a couple of years ago. The geographic midpoint of the ACC, stretching from Boston to Florida and then out to, I guess, near Chicago with Notre Dame. The geographic midpoint of the ACC is Reidsville, North Carolina, which is 20 miles north of Greensboro. It just makes sense. It's the place. It's right in the center of everything. No. Plus, then yes, it's, man, the venue is awesome. The people in Greensboro are used to hosting us. You know, I know, yeah, some of those folks who cover the old Big East schools don't like going there. They call it a cow town. We don't care much what they think anyway, though. So that's too bad for them.
Yeah, well, they can stay home.
They can stay home. That's right.
You know,
we didn't want y'all anyway.
So not to shift this from sports to politics, but I just can't help. But you said the ACC tournament in March, early March, we don't know what the situation is going to be. It could be sparsely attended. I watched it, you know, this does not make any sense to me, these mandates that are going on. I watched the NFL game last night between Tampa Bay and the Los Angeles Clippers, Rams. Or the Rams. Yeah. And in Raymond James Stadium, they must have had, now it was scattered out, but they had probably 25,000 to 30,000 people there. How can there be such disparity between letting 25 or 30,000 people into a venue and literally allowing a couple hundred into a venue?
I mean, you know, that's not
make sense.
It's an interesting question. And that allows me, I guess, gives me the opening to talk about how I was at the UVA football game this past weekend, the UVA Abilene Christian game. I was actually, you know, I've done this in the past, you know, being a reporter, and I'm in my 25th year as a journalist. You know, when I first started out, at the News Virginian, where both actually Scott and I both worked there for different times for years. I was a news reporter in addition to being a sports reporter. And when I would do a news event, you know, one of my editors early on said, hey, you know, when you're there at an event, do a crowd count, you know, and sometimes it's going to be too many people to do a crowd count. But if you can count the crowd, you know, or at least get an estimate of the crowd, then that adds detail to your story. If there's a grand opening for a business and there's 66 people there, then put that in the story, et cetera. So I hadn't done a crowd count in a while because, you know, now I don't cover ribbon cuttings and things like that. I you know, primarily when I'm out at an event, I'm covering a sporting event and there's, you know, tens of thousands of people at these events. So I stood up for the national anthem and I'm in the press box and everybody's, the families that were allowed into the game were underneath, you know, and spread out in front of us. And I thought to myself, I can count these people. So during the national anthem, I count 167 people, the state of Virginia allowing up to 250. Scott, you have me, bud. I don't know. Cause I thought about that, you know, they were spread out. I mean, like, you know, you could see where they set the people up. Like there were seat backs for the folks where they were sitting. So there were like five people together in one section, you know, one area, and then there'd be two people here and three people here and et cetera. You know, you could fill the place up with that. And what would the difference be? You know, you're outside. I mean, you know, we're now I can understand inside's different. You know, and from what we know, at least, you know, from what we're being told, inside can be a different thing. So, you know, I can understand that they'll be more restrictive, at least during this time. There is more spread going on right now. This is the normal cold and flu season time. This is normally when things really heat up. Ironically, it's right around the holidays, which is when we all get together anyway, and Thanksgiving and Christmas. Normally, we see a lot of cold and flus, and hospitals get overwhelmed or close to overwhelmed this time of year in normal years. Now, COVID seems to be replacing the flu, which is good news. We thought we'd have both. It's actually, you know, it's COVID replacing flu than it is COVID and flu. So that's great news. But hospitals are still, you know, leery of what could happen and that kind of thing. So that's my long way around of saying, Scott, I don't know, man. I wish I knew. I wish it made sense why Florida and Virginia, you know, and not just Florida and Virginia. I guess, you know, there's we've seen a lot of when you watch the games on the weekend. You watched a game this weekend. I was at the stadium in Charlottesville. You were telling me by text about another game this weekend where there were a lot of people at a game. So. I don't know, man. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Now, if you look at it and if you say, well, maybe it's just done depending upon regional, how that state or how that region is faring. But in my limited knowledge of being able to interpret what those charts look like, Florida was far worse shape than Virginia.
You know,
certainly not any better.
I don't think they're any better. I'd have to do the per capita count, but you asked me, I remember now, you asked me about South Carolina. It must have been, Clemson didn't play, so it must have been South Carolina was playing. And I did a quick, because it was between play or between drives or something like that of the UVA game. And I did a quick comparison of
Kate. It was actually the Coastal Carolina game.
Coastal, thank you, yes.
And they said that, and even the announcers that were broadcasting the game said that Coastal Carolina had limited or maxed the capacity to 5,000.
Okay. But maybe because their stadium is what it is. Maybe.
Yeah. The stadium probably only holds 12.
Clemson had 19,000 at our game. And their stadium holds 80,000. So.
But then they were saying that it looked more like about 10,000 at Coastal Carolina.
And the comparison I did showed that South Carolina's numbers on a per capita basis were worse than Virginia's on Saturday, at least, you know. So South Carolina's got about 5 million residents. We got about 9 million, and we had a similar number of cases on that day. So, I mean, so that means that theirs was 1.6 times worse. I don't know. You know, I will say this, though. I don't know how much of a difference it makes, certainly from a bottom line standpoint, whether if you have 250 people there. I'm not sure they're charging those 250 people at UVA games. I'd have to ask. I doubt it. Those folks aren't having access to the concession stand, so you're not making money on those people. I don't know if you're making a lot of money if you have 19,000 at a Clemson game. You're certainly not making what you make when you have 80,000 there. And so it, I don't know, Scott, if then from a affect the game standpoint, it didn't seem to affect the game to me once the game started. I mean, yeah, when I was looking around counting 167 people in front of me, that was noticeable. But when the game started, it was a football game. And I really didn't pay attention to the crowd or lack thereof. So, and the players seemed to, you know, they played football. So, it was odd at first, but I would surprise the hell out of me if there's people at UVA basketball games, fans that is, in the foreseeable near future, being, you know, December, January, who knows if things improve, great, they will, but I don't know that I really foresee things improving necessarily until the warmer weather comes back, and that's usually late February, early March.
Yeah, it's just, you know, some things just, I'm a type of person that I like to ask why.
Yeah.
And to watch how these different schools are treating how many fans they allow, and it just doesn't make sense. Maybe it's not political, but it sure seems like it.
Here's the obvious why. I don't want to say it's political, but I mean, the states we talked about, South Carolina and Florida, have Republican governors, and Virginia has a Democratic governor. I mean, and I think that there is correlation. If you go to other states, Notre Dame had something like 15,000, 16,000 fans at its game with Clemson. Maybe it was more than that. And they stormed the field afterwards. Indiana has a Republican governor. I mean, so it's not hard to look at these factors and see that there is, causation. I'm not sure. Correlation, yes. So whether that makes it political is another question. But there's certainly that has to be addressed. That does have to be said out loud.
And that's unfortunate if it is.
I don't know if it's unfortunate. I mean, we can say that it's unfortunate because we want more fans at games, or you could say, the other side of the coin could say those states are being reckless, allowing those people in the games. Who knows? I mean, the unfortunate thing, now that we've gone off and ripped the Band-Aid off here and started talking politics and public health in the context of sports, the odd thing to me is we're in the ninth month of this now. And we still don't have any kind of meaningful numbers to tell us what we should and shouldn't be doing. I mean, we don't have numbers to tell us community spread in an athletics venue. We don't even know if eating in a restaurant or outside of a restaurant or not, or going to groceries. We don't have any numbers on the spread of this in terms of that. We don't know. So we don't know if closing down a football stadium helps or hurts. We don't know if closing down a restaurant helps or hurts. We're just doing it because somebody says to do it. So that's the frustrating thing, is that we don't have actual data. And we're 9 months into this. And by the time we get the actual data, we're going to be out of it. So it's not going to help us at all anyway.
Yeah. And when I said that's a shame that if it's political, what I meant is that if politics is making those decisions instead of relying on science, then that's the problem I see, is you should rely on science. And if science tells you that it's okay to have 25% capacity in an outdoor arena, then okay. If science tells you you're in an area that says that's not, which I can't understand that concept, then we need to go on science, not who the governor or the state happens to be.
Well, I'll just jump on that point and say, I don't know that we don't have the science. We don't have the numbers. Nobody's looking at these things, which that's the frustrating thing. Like, and this is a failure of both Republican and Democratic governors in the 50 states, and, the Republican president who's on his way out the door, and also the non-political people at the CDC, at your health departments across the country. I will indict now. I mean, I've already thrown this wide net out. I will also indict the medical researchers at places like UVA and Harvard and Johns Hopkins, et cetera. Every place of a medical school, somebody, I'm not saying everybody, but somebody or somebodies, a few somebodies, should have said, you know what, we should start studying this stuff just so we know, just so we can inform our decisions. And so, you know, I know it's a, in the grand scheme, it's a little thing whether or not fans get to beat a game or a basketball game. But I mean, you know, it's a bigger thing if people can have jobs. And, you know, a lot of people have lost jobs because restaurants have closed and, you know, the retail stores have shut hours down and that kind of thing because people aren't going in because they're scared. 9 months into this, we just don't know. And that to me is the most frustrating thing. So I'm not going to say it's 100% politics. It's, you know, certainly your outlook is politics. I mean, you know, you're a Republican, not because you're just a Republican. You wear red and you root for the Republican team. You're a Republican because you're a conservative and your outlook is framed that way. You're a Democrat because similar things. You have an outlook that makes you a Democrat. I don't want to say that Ralph Northam is doing what he's doing because he's a Democrat. And he wants to hurt Trump, and therefore he's hurting UVA football fans. And I don't want to say Ron DeSantis, who's a Republican, wants to back Trump because Trump's already lost the election. And he just wants to. They're looking at the same set of facts and interpreting them differently. And what's frustrating to me is that we don't have better guidance from either the CDC, from your various state health departments, from academia that gives us any guiding principles from which we can get the best information.
Yeah, and it doesn't appear it's getting any better.
It's only, I honestly, Scott, I really think that by the time we know it's going to be like 2 years from now, we're going to be long, long out of it. I mean, you know, thankfully, we have three vaccine candidates now that are all pretty effective. You know, and this is in the context of sports. This is important. If you're a sports fan, it's important to know that there are three vaccine candidates that are effective. The Pfizer one was the first we heard about like 2 weeks ago. 94% effective, we're told. Its limitation is it's costly in terms of how it's refrigerated. It has to be refrigerated at extremely low temperatures. It has a quick shelf life as a result. The second one, the one last week, I've lost track of who that one was, but that one was also 90% plus effective.
Pfizer?
Pfizer was the first one. The second one was last week, and that's who I lost the name of in my mind. But theirs doesn't need to be refrigerated. It's cheaper. The third one, AstraZeneca, so far it's 90% plus effective, and it's also by far the cheapest of the three. So we've got three. That's the important thing. You got three, you know, different options. That means a lot of vaccines will be out there. Again, we're getting word that, I mean, I've seen a date of between December 5th and December 10th of when the first vaccines will actually be implemented for healthcare workers in the United States. That's a couple weeks away. You know, if you put your perspective hat on, you know, it's going to take some time to go through the various groups of people who are going to get inoculated. You and I, Scott, are not, you're more of a priority probably than me. You're a few years older than me. We're both pretty healthy though, so we're not high priority people. Your first priorities are your healthcare workers. Your second priorities then are your most vulnerable, the older folks, especially compromised folks health-wise. And you start going down the list. I'm probably last on the list, honestly, as far as that goes. And that's okay with me. The important thing is that, you know, the sense I'm getting, more people who I read who have reasonableness about them. And there are a lot of people who still do. They just don't have the Twitter followings, and they don't have maybe CNN calling them up and having them on their shows every night. But the sensible people who cover this issue say that March, April, we should be getting back to some sense of normal. It's not going to be like, here's the way I say it, Scott. You're not going to be naked running on the beach normal. You know, you're not going to be free to the wind normal in March, but you're going to be getting much closer to that by the early spring. And so in a sports context, that means our football season is still going to be topsy-turvy. It means basketball season, get used to scheduling changes, get used to games being put off. But we might have something of a normal baseball season, at least maybe after May or so. We might actually be at O's and Nats games. So thankfully, the vaccine people work their butts off, even if the experts like the Faucis of the world sat on their ass and didn't and could never come up with data recommendations that made sense, et cetera. You know, the vaccine people did their job, the others didn't.
All right, so enough politics, pandemics. I want to switch it back to football. Was listening to ESPNU this morning with Rick Neuhauser, and he just blasted Florida State. For those that don't maybe know the details, Clemson's already down in Tallahassee. The game was set to go. Noon kickoff, I believe, nationally televised, correct?
And then that was the schedule.
And around 9:30, the game all of a sudden was postponed. Speculation is that Florida State just wasn't interested in getting a butt kicking on national TV. And they pulled the string on that game. And Neuhauser basically agreed with that premise. So if that is true, what do you think the chances of us getting our game in down there? Because I know they didn't want to get their butts kicked against Clemson, but there's no better. I'm sure it's not much better to get your butts kicked against Virginia.
Well, let's give the other side of that story, though. And I don't know, you know, I mean, the other side of the story is Clemson had a player that Clemson says tested negative three times last week for COVID. But somehow the Florida State people, I mean, this is, I don't understand how they heard this. The Florida State medical people heard that this player had symptoms. Now, symptoms can be, I mean, heck, this is, I mentioned earlier, it's cold and flu season. It's also still allergy season for some people. I'm an allergy person. So if I blow my nose, does that mean, you know, I've got symptoms of COVID? I mean, you know, because I run 6 miles every day. I'm outside. Some days, you know, the allergies do worse to me than others. So, but they found out that there was a player with symptoms. And so the medical people met and they decided not to play the game. If that was, and I guess an issue I would bring up there would be if Florida State had an issue with that particular player, and we don't know the identity of the player, but if they had an issue with that player, could that not have been communicated sooner before Clemson traveled with that player? We don't know that it was or wasn't communicated. Let's presume they didn't, because Clemson would they have traveled with that player? Could they have maybe put that player on a different mode of transportation, whatever the case could have been? So I think there's more nuance to this, Scott, than originally thought. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know that Florida State, because the game is still presumably going to have to be rescheduled and played. And I don't know that putting it off means you're going to be any better in 2 or 3 weeks than you were on Saturday. And now Clemson's mad. I mean, so, you know, if you were worried about getting your asses kicked, now you're going to get your asses kicked. And the only difference is going to be when it's 58-7 in the fourth quarter, they're going to onside kick and they're going to try to run score even more. So, I don't know that I'm worried about this weekend in that context, because, you know, the UVA folks have been fortunate. You know, Bronco Mendenhall addressed this in his Zoom press conference this week. They learned a lot from their first road trip to Clemson, as it turned out. And that's the only time they had any issues. They had a couple guys test positive, but then they had contact tracing that led to several other players being taken out of the game. And then they had similar issues for the Miami game just because of contact tracing and quarantining. So they've learned. You know, he said, if you see a UVA, a bus with a UVA logo driving down the road on the way to a road game from the hotel, in years past, you would have seen 6 buses. You might see 15 now, because they're spreading the players out and spreading all the staff out. And they've learned a lot. They don't have players sitting beside each other on planes. You know, they spread people out. They spread the locker rooms all spread out. They, you know, the hotel accommodations are different. Bronco Mendenhall, not surprisingly, you give him a complex problem and he's going to spend all spring and summer figuring it out. And he has, and they've done a great job with that. And so as a result, no positives in the program in the last several weeks. So if Florida State is looking for an excuse, I don't think they're going to find one to be able to not play this weekend, unless it's internal. And then your issue comes up, Scott. If Florida State begs out of this one, I think the ACC then has to intervene and do something and maybe make them forfeit a game or two.
I don't think forfeiting is really that big a deal for Florida State now. I mean, so let's turn this around. What's Florida State's record?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they
like 2-6.
Maybe two. It sounds. I'll go with yours. With
you. Let's just say that they're 2-6. Mm-hmm. even in this pandemic season, what do you think the chances of that game getting canceled under the same circumstances if Florida State was 8-0?
I mean, it's hard to say. Were they legitimately concerned? And I don't know the answer. Were they legitimately concerned about a player having COVID playing in the game? I mean, I don't know if that's legit or if it was not. I mean, if they're 8-0, I would think that they might look at that a little less. And we also don't know the player. Was it Trevor Lawrence? Or was it Travis Etienne? Or was it some second string long snapper? I mean, you know, without knowing those things, but I think that, Florida State's had a lot of issues the last few years. I don't think they wanted this attention. I don't know that they could not have thought that this would have come out this way. That they would look like they look. I have to think that someone would have said, hey, you know what? Having Clemson fly down here and stay last night and you know, everybody's in the stadium warming up right now and we're not going to play this game and we're 2-6 and they're number 4 in the country. It's going to look like we just want to bag out of a game. We probably should think about that, you know, and think that through. So if possible, Scott, this has made their season worse. So I don't know that it's worked out for them if that's the case.
Changing subjects a little bit, sticking with college football. And I was thinking about this morning. Top three coaches that are on the hot seat as of right now. If the ADs don't give them the mulligan for this being a pandemic season, and they treat it like it's a regular season, give me your top three. I would ask you for top five, but I'll just stick with the top three coaches in the country that are on the hot seat.
Well, Jim Harbaugh would be number one with a bullet and a star and bold print and 36-point or 68-point type, whatever you want to give to the type. World War II kind of headlines. We won World War II kind of headlines. I think what you're trying to get me to say is Justin Fuente. The reason I'll go with Harbaugh first and ahead of Fuente, I'd have to look at – I haven't studied Fuente's contract situation. He's in his fifth year just like Bronco Mendenhall. I thought after his first year they re-upped him, like gave him a – kind of like we did with Mike London, you know, and you kind of hamstring yourself by extending a guy too early and then you find out later that maybe we shouldn't have done that. Because that's another factor. And it could even be a factor in the Harbaugh decision at Michigan, whatever decision they have to make there, is this is a pandemic year. So it's not just a pandemic year in terms of, hey, everything's weird, everything's topsy-turvy. Money's not what it has been. You know, Michigan has 110,000 seats in that stadium that have gone empty. That's 110,000 times 8 times whatever they charge per ticket, times whatever those people eating popcorn and drinking soft drinks and buying sweatshirts that they're not getting this year. So do they have the money to buy out Jim Harbaugh? Does Virginia Tech, now they have a 65,000 seat stadium, you know, do the same math, 8 times 65,000 times all that stuff. They don't have that money this year to buy out a guy. So, I mean, you might have guys who should get fired because they stink, who linger because we can't afford to buy them out. So those two guys will be the top. I don't know if there's a third. I mean, I haven't really paid close attention outside of that. We've already seen Will Muschamp get the axe at South Carolina.
Yeah, he was on my list until he got the axe. So he's not no longer on the hot seat. My three would be, and I'm not sure what order. Well, Harbaugh, I agree with that. Harbaugh, definitely at the top of the list. But what about James Franklin at Penn State? They're facing a possibility of having a winless season.
I would give him the COVID-19 mulligan, because the difference with Harbaugh and to me, the difference with Harbaugh and Fuente is this isn't 1 year out of context. I mean, because Franklin, I mean, Penn State started the year ranked in the top 10. There were expectations is what you would say there. And it's, you know, I don't follow them, you know, 100% closely, but it doesn't seem to me that this is a continuation of a trend. This seems like an outlier. You know, this is a 1 year where we suck, but it's 1 year. Whereas Harbaugh had never, he's not won Big Bear. I mean, he's won 8 or 9 or 10 games, but he hasn't beaten Ohio State. He keeps losing to Michigan State, you know. So, I mean, this year could have been a year where if they had won, it would have been like, hey, see, Harbaugh finally won here. But this is like, you know, man, you know, God, we've not won well with him. And then this year stinks. Fuente, same thing. I mean, Fuente, 2 seasons ago, 6-7, last year, 8-5, this year, 4-5, and they could easily lose out and be 4-7 at the end of this because they got Clemson and Virginia to finish out with. And so if you're talking 2 losing seasons out of 3 and your 1 winning season was 8-5, I mean, he'd be under 500 for a 3-year run at Virginia Tech, which thinks itself, maybe they're not, I don't think they are, but they think themselves a potential major player. So, I don't know about Franklin. I mean, Franklin seems like a guy, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Franklin seems like a guy, this is a 1-year major aberration, but it's an aberration. The other two guys, this is a continuation or a deepening of a trend of decline.
So I'm going to have to qualify this with, if you're doing a term paper and you quote someone, what is that called?
Not citation. Quoting. Your citation. Yes.
Yeah.
Your footnote.
So I'm certain you're familiar with Mike Farrell of the recruiting guru. Is it Mike Farrell?
I'll go with, yeah.
His concern about Franklin is that the last couple of years and even the next couple of recruiting classes, Penn State is not recruiting extremely well in the hotbed of football talent, Florida, Texas, South. They're getting kids. They're getting some 3-star, 4-star players. But a lot of them are coming out of the Northeast. And that was his concern, is that they're not, if they're going to be competitive, for Penn State to be successful, they have to be successful against Ohio State and Michigan in the Big Ten. And Ohio State and Michigan can go anywhere, and they have a roster full of players from Texas, Florida, Louisiana, the hotbeds of high school football recruiting. And Penn State's not been getting those players. They still have had good recruiting classes, but they're getting kids out of the Northeast instead of the areas that Michigan and Ohio State are going in and plucking kids out of. So that was his concern about Franklin, is that their recruiting is starting to show some signs that they're not able to go to the same areas that Ohio State and Michigan are to recruit players.
Here's why he's safe for at least a year, maybe 2 years. He took over. Remember, I mean, he took over. Bill O'Brien took over for Joe Paterno. It was the train wreck of all train wrecks times 10 times a million. O'Brien stayed for 2 years and went in the NFL. And so, you know, the rebuild, you know, they let all the players leave, et cetera, et cetera. Franklin's first 2 years, 7-6, 7-6. Since then, 11-3, 11-2, 9-4, 11-2. Nope, he's safe. He gets a chance to reclaim himself. He gets a chance to recruit better, et cetera. He's earned it. I mean, he took a program that was originally given the death penalty. All the players were released, and he's turned it into, except for this year, he's turned it into a consistent winner. That would be 42 wins in 4 years, the last 4 years, at 10.5 wins a year. And not that an SEC school wouldn't say, okay, one bad year, you're done. No, he's got to be safe. I mean, if he's not, then you have to start wondering if you're the people on the market to be the next Penn State coach, why would I go there? Because, damn, that guy won for 4 years. He had one bad season, and then they got rid of him. Why would I uproot my family and go win there and then have one mediocre season and be done? I mean, you got to think in those terms, too. You got to give a guy a chance to overcome, you know, one bad season, if only for the next coach, to show that next coach you're trying to offer a lot of money, hey, we'll give you latitude. But you got to win eventually.
Yeah, that same mentality certainly could be applied to Fuentes, Tech has not had good recruiting classes for any of his tenure there, from what I can I mean, not
great, but you know, for Tech, probably fine. His issue is, to me, his issue is he's not winning on the field. He's that would be 18-17 in the last three seasons with two late games left this season. You know, after starting pretty solid, I think they won 19. He was something like 19-9 or 19 and I can look his numbers up, but he his first year they went to the ACC championship game. Let me look it up real quick. His issue is that
he was coach of the year in his first year at Tech.
Yeah, he let's see, Justin Fuente. He was coach of the year, and you know, you start then wondering, was it because he was 10-4 his first year, 9-4 his second year, so 19-8 his first 2 years, and since then he's been 18-17. So,
Very unexplicable losses. Usually every year there's those games that there's at least one, if not multiple, that you just kind of scratch your head and
say,
how'd they lose that game?
And honestly, if you're Tech, 18-17 is inexplicable. I mean, you didn't hire this guy. And I mean, Scott, you were there with me when they announced his hire. It was Mike London's – we knew it was Mike London's last game. It was Frank Beamer's last game. We was in Scott Stadium on a Friday afternoon, Black Friday, and the word got out. I think the kickoff that day was 12 o'clock. Word got out about 11 o'clock. Somebody leaked it. We all know who leaked it. Whip Babcock leaked it to the Washington Post that they had hired the guy. Fuente was the hot guy at the time. He was the coach at Memphis. He'd won at Memphis. I still have his numbers up here. He had gone 10-3 and 9-3 at Memphis. In his last two seasons, turning them around. They had two losing seasons his first 2 years there. He had been, you know, a quarterback guru before that as an assistant coach. So, you know, so they leaked it on the day that was Beamer's last day to a point where, and then of course Babcock comes in to the post game. I mean, it was the most classless thing I think I've ever seen, because Beamer's sitting there in the big chair. Normally people don't know this who don't cover, you know, post game media scrums like we do. At UVA games, usually the visiting coach has a small room off the side where they have their own press conference, and then the UVA coach has the big room.
A hat closet.
Yeah, basically a hat closet for the visiting coach, yeah. And the UVA coach has the big room. Well, on this day, because it was Beamer's last day, UVA class act that UVA is, hey, Beamer, you get the big room. We're having our guy, who we're getting ready to fire, by the way. We're going to have him go after your guy, and you get the big room. And Beamer's sitting there with his wife, Cheryl, and
his whole family was there. I believe he had a couple of.
I know his wife was sitting beside him. Yeah, I think he did have a couple of kids with him, maybe grandkids too. It was his last game in Virginia, because they were going to play a bowl game, but it was his last game in the state of Virginia, Commonwealth of Virginia. And I mean, his wife's already in tears before the press conference even starts. And Babcock comes in and goes on for 5 minutes about how, I'm not going to address the rumors that we've hired a new coach. We'll address that on Monday. This is all about Coach Beamer. But it took him 5 minutes to say that. That was his way of saying, F you, UVA, I just got the hottest coach in the market, and I'm going to use your stage to tell everybody about it. I'm even going to upstage Frank Beamer, without whom none of my people are even here. And here we are 5 years later, and they stink. So, you know, sometimes karma will bite you in the ass. And I think it's certainly the case at Virginia Tech that that's the case.
Well, and there's we know this old adage in sports coaching is sometimes it's, you don't want to be the man that succeeds the man. And Fuentes, I mean, you come in there and with trying to not just equal Frank Beamer, but that's one of the reasons that Coach Beamer was kind of shown the door, is that Tech thought the same thing that UVA thought back when they gently encouraged Coach Welsh to leave, that we're better than 7-8 wins a year.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget when Coach Groves' initial press conference, introductory press conference at Bryan Hall at Scott Stadium, he said, I didn't come here to win ACC championships. I came here to win national championships. He was true to his word. He never won an ACC championship. Unfortunately, he never won a national championship as well. So, and Groh was succeeding a legend. So,
well, in Tech's case, you know, their fan base, and I guess the analysis done was we don't play offense well enough. So, they kept Bud Foster, who wanted the head job, didn't get it. They kept him to run the defense, and then they brought Fuente in to fix the offense. And first couple of years, the offense got fixed. It hasn't been fixed the last couple of years, obviously. And the situation with Foster was probably awkward, to say the least. I mean, here's the guy who was the guy, the man, Beamer. He was his right-hand man. He thinks he should have been the head man. He didn't get that chance. He stayed on, and it had to be awkward that for the first, you know, how many ever months Fuente was there, he had to ask Bud Foster, his top assistant, hey, you know, where's the bathroom in this building? You know, where do I park here? You know, you've been here for how many ever? You've been here for 30 years. I've been here for 10 days. You know, so it was awkward, and it didn't work out. It just didn't work out. And so there's an aspect too, probably, Scott. I mean, as it turned out, they got the hot hire and we got the better hire. We didn't get the hot guy. We got the guys that I still cannot figure out how we got Bronco Mendenhall. I who even knew, and they knew, but who even knew that he would leave BYU? That's not leaving Memphis.
Well, that's leaving BYU, the capital of the Mormon religion.
Well, and he's a BYU. He didn't play at BYU, but his dad did. He had brothers who did. He wanted to, just, you know, couldn't get in there, couldn't play there. But it's like, that's like recruiting the Pope to be your, you know, to take over your Baptist church.
Someone at UVA, and I had a conversation with a very authoritative source about UVA about that question, and he someone at UVA was very, whether it was in the AD or whether it was alumni, but someone was very attentive to things that were happening out there. And one of the things that Bronco Mendenhall, I think what I'm trying to say is that they knew that Coach Mendenhall could be got.
Oh, I know that they knew, but
Bronco had said that
we didn't know.
That the fact that BYU turned down an opportunity to join the Big 12 really was the straw that broke the camel's back for Coach Mendenhall, because he did not see a path to a national championship, a big bowl, the big bowl. I mean, BYU was 10 or 11 wins. They were going to the Holiday Bowl. That because that's the only bowl they had as an independent. So once BYU turned down the opportunity to join the Big 12, the writing was on the wall that Coach Mendenhall, and he was a man of his word. Those weren't idle threats to get a raise or to maybe arm twist BYU into the alumni and the board of directors or whatever, visitors or whoever controls Brigham Young University, to get into a conference. That was just his – this is what I'm about. I want to be able to take a team, a program, to the highest level. And without a conference affiliation, I can't do that at BYU. And whoever, there was someone at UVA or groups of people that knew what he had said, and they knew that he would be available.
Well, I know that story. I'm just saying out loud that I'm kind of remembering from 5 years ago. Actually, yeah, it was 5 years ago, because it was December of 2015 when we first got that word. It was a Friday afternoon, and I remember seeing the press release, because we were awaiting who was going to be the new coach. We were, you know, we knew that it had been open for a couple of weeks, and I've never been more blown away by a hire than that hire. And so I bring that up. His record, I mean, the Tech fans who would be watching or listening either live or on the archive of this would say, yeah, but your guy still has a losing record at your school. Yeah, our guy inherited a train wreck, dumpster fire, nuclear detonation all in one, went 2-10 his first year, and since has taken Virginia to an Orange Bowl, which to my recollection, which includes having it on my screen in front of me right now, that's something that Fuente has not led his team to. And he inherited a better team. He inherited a 10-win team. Bronco inherited a 10-loss team. And, you know, Tech is facing something right now. But again, you know, we started this in the context of talking about coaches who are on the hot seat. Scott, I, you know, outside of the SEC, and we've already seen the one in the SEC, I don't know that, and I don't know it's because they get a pandemic get out of jail free card. I think it might be as much the lack of money that would be a factor for programs who just say, this year we're going to eat it. And I bet Tech eats it. I bet Michigan eats it. You know, I don't know that anybody gets fired outside of what we've already seen, which is what Muschamp. I'd be surprised, I guess I should say. Scott, I can't hear you.
I think everybody gets a mulligan this year. But if, you know, as a UVA fan, I think Tech fans are being awfully hard on Justin Fuentes. I think they should give him a lifetime contract myself.
Yeah, I've threatened, Scott and I have texted back and forth with each other. I keep threatening. I've still got some web design skills. I haven't designed a new website in a while, but for a while there, I made my living as a web designer. And I've threatened to launch a website, don'tfirejustinfuente.com. that would be a nice parody website. But, you know, that said, Tech fans and you know, Scott, you frequent their message board after losses because it gives you great pleasure to do so.
And I like watching train wrecks as well.
And you've had a lot of opportunity to do that recently. You know, the current generation of Tech fans would not know the history of this. The older generation of Tech fans would remember that Beamer was very close a couple times to being canned. Probably should have been canned. In fact, if he had had his fifth season and his sixth season in the social media era, he would not have had a seventh season. And his seventh season ended up being a 9-3 season. The next year they went to the Orange Bowl. So, you know, it's, but that history is important. I mean, honestly, George Welsh had a bad sixth season at UVA. You know, again, would he have survived that in this era, in the social media era? So decisions shouldn't be made by message board people, but we know that their message board people are hot. But I think you're going to have to live another offseason with your guy.
Message board people are hot and often very, very out of touch with what really is going on in the world.
That is a fair statement. It's an understated statement and an important one. I mean, as many message boards as I follow, and this Scott, you can apply to everything. See, I'm a college sports fan like you are. I'm a pro wrestling fan who also, you know, and I worked in the wrestling business for several years, including as a promoter and a booker and writer for a company that had a TV show. Wrestling fans think all you got to do to book a show is just say, I'm going to have these two guys in the main event. And that's all you got to do. So that base is also the same. And so are politics, both the right and the left, man, it's just heated. And everybody's an expert. I think that's in general about everything. College football, the average dumb college football fan thinks that they should be the athletics director. The average dumb NFL fan or pro sports fan thinks they should be the general manager or the coach or the manager or all of the above. The average political person thinks that they should be James Carville and tell everybody what to do. The average wrestling fan thinks they're Vince McMahon. So if we could, you know, it's hard to do because we both work in the news business, Scott. If we could avoid social media, I think we'd be a lot healthier mentally, but it's hard to do so because we have to work in this business and write about what some of these people want us to write about. You're muted, Scott.
Even harder to do so in the midst of a pandemic. But if you do like to follow these message boards, then if you're a Tech fan, this is going to play out well because you're going to fire Fuentes. And you're going to get Jim Harbaugh after he's fired at Michigan.
Oh, dear.
Or maybe Nick Saban wants to prove he can win anywhere.
I think Didn't you suggest that Vince Lombardi can come back from the dead? I was throwing out names, Amos Alonzo Stagg, I mean, Walter Camp, John Heisman, you know, John Heisman, they named the trophy after him. Why not bring him back? No, it's a little tougher and include, you know, to emphasize the a big part of this tough decision that maybe isn't even a tough decision. If you're Whit Babcock, for example, I'm not sure of the identity of the AD at Michigan, but if you're that person, it's money. I mean, you're seeing some programs cut some athletics departments cutting programs. You have Stanford is your almost, you can almost put it in ink every year that they're going to win the Director's Cup, in part because they compete in every sport and they compete great, especially in the Olympic sports. And so, you know, they have the unfair advantage of if there's a sport that the NCAA gives a trophy in, they're in it. And they cut a number of those programs. And we're talking about Stanford with multi-billion dollar endowment did this. So, you know, if you're anybody right now, you're probably not going to be buying out coaches. You know, SEC schools, I mean, yeah, South Carolina for some reason thinks they can do better. I mean, come on. No, you couldn't even win with Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier. I mean, you couldn't win at the top level with Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier. Be happy with your 7 wins. Be happy. Be happy going to the Belk Bowl and getting beaten down by Virginia. That's what your fate is. You're not LSU. You're not Alabama. So just get over yourself. But for these other schools, just wait a year or two and then fire Harbaugh and Fuente and move on.
Right. Harbaugh, I think I read he's making like $9 million a year. And if you're a Tech fan, and I, you know, I'm not gloating in there because we certainly don't have it. We've beaten them one time in 16 years. But if you are advocating to buy Fuentes out, you're not going to get a big name coach. You're going to have to get an FBS program coach, or you're going to have to roll the dice on somebody that you can attract to come there and pay about $2.5 million a year. You're not going to get someone that you've got to pay $5 and $6 million because you don't have the money to do that.
Just like they did with Wednesday. They didn't hire away somebody from a, you know, big name pro. They took Memphis's coach. I mean, and that was a good hire. He won 19 games his first 2 years, but yeah, you're not in the running for, you know, for a big name guy. You're getting a guy that you're hoping becomes a big name guy at your school. You know, you're not getting, I mean, UVA lucked out. The smart people in the department knew something that others didn't know, and they got a great guy in Bronco Mendenhall. You're not stealing a Bronco Mendenhall type. There aren't many of those guys out there that have a track record at a big name program who are looking to go to another school, much less Virginia Tech, especially in this era with the pandemic hurting your revenues. It's just reality right now. So you're better off, you know, honestly, Scott, I use this principle. It comes back to me from 2004 when I hosted a different, I co-hosted a show called ACC Nation with a buddy named Patrick Height. And it was the Pete Gillen era at UVA and UVA basketball. And, you know, Pete, his last 2 or 3 years at least was on the hot seat, and finally UVA pulled the trigger. But I remember asking Dan Bonner one time, we had Dan on our show. He was a regular on our show. Dan's a local native, and so he was always gracious to be on our show. Hey, Dan, what do you think? Should UVA get rid of Pete Gillen? And his answer was, who do you replace him with? Before you fire your guy, you've got to think, who are we replacing him with, and is he going to be better than the guy you have now? And so if you're Virginia Tech, you got to think, you know, I mean, I'm sure the average message board person says, oh, yeah, there's a lot of guys better than Justin Fuente. But now let's you know, throw it out there. Who do you get that's better that you can then afford? And then, you know, what are your expectations for that guy? I mean, does he have to win 10 games next year? Does he go in the hot seat in your mind? Or, you know, do you give him some leeway? And so I've used that thought an awful lot from Dan over the years. And it's, I don't know that you look at the situation at Texan now and say, I mean, unless you've identified a guy, that who was your guy to replace Justin Fuente? I don't know who that would be.
Yeah, I don't think there is that guy. So I think Tech is faced with having another year him, and you know, hindsight, who knows? 2 or 3 years from now, it can be the best move you make. Sometimes it's the one you don't make.
That's right, and that's the case with Frank Beamer. I mean, Frank Beamer, 92-93-ish was on the hot seat. And again, social media era, if we had social media back in 92-93, Frank Beamer doesn't go on and have all those 10-win seasons and, you know, the bowl appearances, Michael Vick, the national championship game run, the empty spot in the trophy case. They wouldn't have had a trophy case to have an empty spot in, Scott, because they wouldn't have even thought about having a trophy case to leave an empty spot for, because they weren't even thinking that big. At least now, I think they've since gotten away, they've done away with the trophy case with the empty spot. But for a while, they aspired. And they aspired because Frank Beamer made them aspire. And they, and now reality is it, and they don't even aspire. But they aspired because of Frank Beamer, and they almost fired the guy. So, yeah, I think that you know, calmer has prevailed. Hey, Scott, it's 4:30 as we're talking now. For people on our podcast listening, that doesn't mean anything to you except that we're an hour in. And we both have appointments after this. So parting shot, last thought as we wrap up our show today.
Well, I just hope that we're sitting here tomorrow talking about the big UVA win over Towson or
whoever
or whomever, or the big UVA win for the shirts over the skins.
We're playing somebody. It's going to be Towson. It's going to be somebody.
Somebody.
But yeah, we'll come back tomorrow after that game that some of us will watch. We'll watch, but some of you will watch, I should say. We'll talk about the game. We'll break it down best we can from the Flow Hoops perspective.
If you don't want to pay $30 to watch Flow Sports, you can kiss my grits.
That's right. Well, $30 in the context, if you'd have driven to the Mohegan Sun, you'd have spent more than $30.
Right. You might have come home divorced.
Yeah. Yeah. In my case, I would have come home with the locks changed. What did you and Scott do again? We didn't go gambling, I promise. So no, we'll talk about that. The game is at 1:30 as of when we were started this show an hour ago. It was scheduled to start at 1:30. We'll see if that changes. If that does change, we'll let you know on investfreepress.com. So 1:30, game will be over at 3:30. Scott and I will jump on here pretty soon after and break things down. And then we'll, hey, basketball season starts, Scott, in about 21 hours. Can't wait.
Yep, I'm right there. And so a lot of people that aren't going to be able to watch that game tomorrow, they're going to get the recap of it sooner than anywhere by tuning into us.
Yeah, we'll give you grievous detail as far as that goes. So thank you, Scott, for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Chris Graham. Thank you for watching, listening, and we will talk to you again soon.